your future.
It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. And welcome to our law enforcement show. About every quarter, we like to bring on the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association. For you, those of you in the know, it's FLEOA. And I haven't hosted the show in several months. I know. John Adler's with me in the studio. Good morning, John.
Hey, Deb. How are you?
Good. John is the national president of FLEOA, and he was just giving me the evil eye, because indeed it is true that I have not hosted the FLEOA show in many months, but I'm back in the groove. And
that's clapping sound effects.
And I'm up on all the law enforcement issues. And it's always good to have with us, when we talk federal law enforcement, it's always good to have with us Tony Vernetti, who is the president of FEDS, the insurer provider to many federal employees, including law enforcement officers. Tony, good morning and welcome to our show. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Deborah. Good morning, John. Thanks for having me.
And FED stands for Federal Employee Defense Services. They're a provider of professional liability insurance. Many guys, men and women, who John represents in his association as 1811s, as I like to say, guns and badges. Those are the likely people who would be carrying insurance. So Tony himself is very up on law enforcement issues. Tony and I were very fortunate to be able to join FLEOA at its national conference a month ago. And if any of you listeners also get our weekly e-report, Fed Agent, Tony's company ran a whole spread. I don't know, John, if you saw it.
I did.
Yeah.
And we appreciate the supportive comments, Tony. It's always great to have Tony there. And for what it's worth, I also am a Fed's policyholder myself. And as someone who doesn't relinquish his pennies too easily, that's a great vote of confidence for Feds.
Right, right. The stereotype of the federal employee. But Fed Agent ran, Tony's company ran a nice spread just going over all of the all of the award winners that came out of the conference. So for those of you looking in more detail for information about the National Conference and FLEOA Awards, check out Fed Agent. But anyway, we're here. We have John. We haven't had John in many months. I'm not sure much has changed on the horizon.
Not on the legislative front.
Right? I think, John, you were here like in June.
Where are we now? Yes. I think you're right, Deb. June or July.
Yeah. And we're still without a budget. But it's good to, it's sort of good to revisit all of the issues on your plate. FLEOA is an organization of over 20,000.
You're about 26,000 active members.
Yeah. That's huge. You're almost like the size of a union.
Ooh.
Right?
I don't like that word.
Right.
Well, you know, there are a lot of similarities in the services we provide our membership, but, you know, we are touted as a professional association. And the reason being, not that we think we're better than anything, because we're not, you know, we're the same as anyone else. The nuance there is that the majority of our membership are exempt from FLSA.
Right.
And therefore are precluded from falling under collective bargaining.
Right.
I think it's always good, John, to remind our listeners just how many agencies the federal law enforcement officers work for that you guys work with.
Yeah, we our membership comes from over 65 different federal agencies.
Wow. I didn't even know that.
I know. In fact, until I got involved with FLEOA, I didn't realize there were 65. I didn't think there were anything beyond 12 federal agencies.
Maybe we shouldn't advertise it because everybody thinks the government's already too big.
No, but see, that's part of my argument, and especially with the SHIELD Act, which we were involved in getting introduced, that it's my goal, it's my challenge to illustrate to all members of Congress how essential every single one of my members are, whether they come from an inspector general, land resource management, Department of Justice, DHS, military, civilian component. They're all equally essential to protecting the homeland and Americans.
Yeah. And, you know, we should start with the SHIELD Act because you had it drafted and proposed. And, you know, everybody, it's hard to say people are fighting for the federal dollar because, you know, Congress isn't giving out federal dollars. So it's some sort of political football that's been going on now in our country for quite a while. It's unclear whether or not the super committee is going to get it done. But it seems very dire. It seems very difficult to get any kind of agreement on it. They couldn't agree. What do you hope to get out of the SHIELD Act?
Yeah, the SHIELD Act, H.R. 2886, introduced by Mike Fitzpatrick, sort of sends the message out there loud and clear that in the event the folks in Congress, as Debbie accurately described it, are incapable of reaching an agreement where we do have a budget, and unfortunately we are confronted with another fiscal shutdown or government shutdown, the bill will call for the funding, the continued funding, the active military and all federal law enforcement that are essential. And my position is everyone, as you said before, Deb, with gun and a badge are absolutely essential to protecting the homeland. So the bill sort of will ensure that no one will be put on a bench. Now, unfortunately, as I speak, we have probation officers that are being furloughed. And I mean, that is, it's unconscionable to think that, you know, I always refer back to that little pie chart on the back of the 1040 tax booklet. And you see what a tiny slither we cost, we being federal law enforcement, cost the overall government in terms of their expenditures. And especially in law enforcement, where most law enforcement agencies are cost justified by virtue of the money they bring in, it is beyond comprehension that I have one person with a badge and a gun sitting on the bench watching as these dangerous decisions only serve to empower dangerous criminals while you put brave men and women on the bench.
Now, wouldn't they, you know, usually you hear about it's so hard to follow this stuff and, you know, I'm in the business. But how long has it been now? Is it almost a year that we've been watching them dicker over? They couldn't pass a 2011 budget. They can't pass a 2012. They're going to try to kick the can down and avoid it all and push it all to 2013. Hey, but don't get me going on Congress. But theoretically, because all the noise is it could shut down. It hasn't, though, in the year. Okay. Isn't it this business about like essential, except for essential positions? And isn't that always what you hear is in the shutdown, essential positions would still be required to come to work? And wouldn't those be your members?
See, Deb, the logic that comes so easily to you, unfortunately, eludes the mindset of some cabinet officials and perhaps agency directors. You're absolutely correct that, you know, when you sort of reduce everything to simplest terms,
probation officers aren't essential.
They should be. But now they come under judiciary. So
it's a separate budget formality
right.
for them.
That's right.
And that sort of complicates our ability to sort of rein in that short-sightedness in terms of those who provide the budgeting for our probation officers and our pretrial officers.
Debbie's question, which was really mine when I saw this, and for those of us inside the Beltway, you hear these terms thrown around all the time, continuing resolution. What does that mean? It means the government continue to work. You know, if we shut down, right, and they say, well, it doesn't mean the government's going to stop, then everybody who's essential can come to work, and then the non-essentials will stay home, and then those you know, the rest of the country says, well, they're not essential, what the heck do we need them for?
Right.
Okay, but you
that
know,
was
at
the
least,
sentiment,
you know,
in the '90s, remember that when they shut it down in the
right,
'90s
right,
that was
right.
the sentiment. It's like, well, if they're not essential, why are we paying for them?
Right. I was actually a judicial law clerk then and was declared non-essential. It tore me up. But getting back to it was always my understanding that everybody in federal law enforcement was always declared immediately essential, and there was never, you know, a funding issue with them. But I guess I'm wrong. It pains me to admit.
No, well, it pains my members who endure that. But no, the regulations did provide, I don't have it in front of me, but it did provide that in that situation, federal law enforcement, criminal investigators in particular, are deemed essential. And anyone whose mission and role is to protect life and property, which all of my members do, including probation officers, are in fact essential. Now, somehow, you know, that particular policy gets lost where the rest of the policies get lost, you know, deep thick in textbooks, which we no longer use because everything is digitalized. And unfortunately, now there's just sort of a very perilous deviation from the logic of that policy. You know, we drafted up an illustration, I guess you can call it a satire, And we sent it out yesterday to every member of Congress. Yes. And in our illustration, we portray a federal agent standing on the unemployment line while a limousine comes by with four sort of symbolic dangerous criminals hanging out the window, sort of flipping the bird to federal agents unemployed. And the point being, and the headline says, "Dear Congress, who benefits from across-the-board cuts?" And what we're concerned about, and Debbie alluded to it before in terms of the super committee, is that if they fail to come up with a recommendation,
it's everybody.
Yes, we'd resort to across-the-board cuts. And what does that mean? Well, that could have a severe impact on our numbers, on agency funding, and more specifically, on the pay and benefits of federal law enforcement.
Well, the SHIELD Act would prevent any kind. That's the whole point of the SHIELD Act that you've proposed, is it prevents and provides funding for military and civilians engaged in life and property enterprise. And that would be, I don't know, if you have a badge and a gun, seems to me you fall into that. So good luck, John, with the SHIELD Act. Good luck with anything.
Thank you, Deb.
It's so difficult. There's no ball getting moved. That's my opinion. There's no ball getting moved up on the Hill for at least a year. I don't anticipate it as they go into the general election. It's, you know, everybody's waiting to see what happens in a week, and I imagine the SHIELD Act sort of tied to it. We do need to take our first break. John has many more issues that he would like to cover with us that are important to FLIOA, but we need to take our first break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hello, my federal friends. It's the Geico Gecko, and I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news. Geico now offers discounts for most federal employees GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. Geico, the government employees insurance company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about Geico's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth. Joining me in the studio this morning is John Adler, the president of the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, FLIOA, and Tony Vernetti. He is president of Federal Employee Defense Services, FEDS. Of course, we're in D.C., so we have to use all kinds of acronyms and abbreviations and alphabet soup letters. But you know what I need to do? I need to give out our contact information if you have a question or a comment for John. It's a great opportunity to get his attention. You can give us a call toll-free. We're at 1-877-936-9333, or you can send us an email. The email address is fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. So, John, one of many legislative items on your agenda, the next item that we have on your agenda is the Civilian Service Recognition Act. And I've heard a lot about it in my office because one of our lobbyists, Jenny Mattingly, is working very closely with the SEA on it. So I sort of hear about it in passing. But tell our listeners what this act would do if passed.
And Jenny, by the way, is also FLIOA's public affairs director. So, you know, she's a superwoman for us all. It's a fantastic bill.
I'm going to make
bill.
Her do the show from now on. I keep telling her that. She knows these things better than me.
Actually, you and I can go for a long line. Jenny can just update everyone out there on what's going on and probably do it, well, at least on my end, do it in a more interesting way than what I say. Great bill, really spearheaded by the SES Association. Give them a lot of credit for getting together all the stakeholder groups. And what the bill calls for is to provide an official flag to the surviving family members of a government employee who is killed while conducting their government service or in the process of their government employment. And I think, you know, it's a great bill to recognize the dedication of all government workers, mm-hmm. not just my members in the active military, but those who work for the government and do make sacrifices on various levels. And if, in fact, you know, everyone sort of plays a role into keeping our government running, and should somebody killed while engaging in their government service, they should be recognized and their family should be presented with an American flag.
Yeah, what's wrong with getting the flag? Why is it controversial?
I don't even know that it is controversial, but these are one of these bills that you read and you say to yourself, we're not doing this already? I mean, it really right. just seems so basic. And
no, I think John makes that's a good point. If you're, even if you're a civilian employee and you're not in the uniformed services, and while performing your duties, you're killed in the line of civilian duty, seems like the government should award you the national flag.
Well, and particularly, it's kinda nice. And particularly in today's post 9/11 world, you know, yeah. where everything, yeah. you know, it's all hands on deck, war on terror, and there's so much commingling between, you know, the active military reserves and the civilian service. You know, everybody's on deck, everybody's fighting. You know, and it's why I had
people
you
feel that way.
How many agencies? You know, 63 agencies, whatever. You know, you. Represent, you know, people don't appreciate that. You know, you think, you know, FBI, ATF, this. And the same thing when you're talking about being killed in the line of duty, you think, you know, active duty military. And the average citizen, you know, doesn't know. If you go put your boots on the ground in Iraq and Afghanistan, you'll be darn surprised how many people
civilians?
Are civilian
yeah.
employees, DEA agents,
yeah.
you know, ATF agents you represent,
yeah.
you know, are there doing that.
No, I actually have, right now I'm working on a client case, and my client's under investigation by Army CID. And so I sort of had a lot of dealings with the CID agent. Washington field office, they only have two agents actually posted in their duty station. Everybody else is where, you know, where the Army is. And that happens to be fighting two wars. And so there's a very large civilian CID, Criminal Investigative Division, which you can understand when there are that many tens and hundreds of thousands of people in an area and contractors and government money, why you would need cops. Civilian cops. And as Tony points out, those civilian positions are very precarious. And I think, Tony, the reason why it was like, oh, how come they're not getting it anyway? There really wasn't an impetus until post 9/11
right.
when all of a sudden civilians between 9/11 and the two wars, where all of a sudden people start hearing about knowing civilians killed in the line of duty.
And we're not just talking about law enforcement.
Right.
You know,
right.
it's you know, any
State
kind of
Department
federal employee.
Officials.
Right.
AID officials.
Foreign
I think
service officers.
A lot
Foreign
of it now is sort of just changing the culture here, the mindset in a positive way, to have everyone sort of recognize the sacrifice and service. Not just, and again, and you know, I'm here to represent my membership, but you know, I rely on civilian government employees as mm-hmm. well to help me perform my mission, mm-hmm. as we all do, whether it's law enforcement or any other mission. It's all vital to the greater good.
Mm.
And I think it's important that we all understand, while we sort of get sickened by this budget debate that we have to get exposed to every day, that we not lose sight of where our freedoms and our liberties come from, and everyone pitches in to provide them.
Yeah. I had that conversation with Craig Floyd. He was on our show a couple weeks ago, maybe a month or so ago. And, you know, he was talking about the work of law enforcement, and it's about, you know, the line between, you know, a crime-free or, you know, protecting citizens from crime and not. And I said, I actually think law enforcement provides much more to a civilized democratic society. It allows us to exercise our freedoms.
You're right, Deb. I mean, I was there at Ground Zero during 9/11, or actually I call it Ground Hero, and I was also there as a first responder after Hurricane Katrina hit. And I can tell you that without law enforcement present, you do not have law and order. You have chaos. And until law and order is reestablished after an act of terrorism or mm-hmm. an act of nature, you have chaos. And by the way, Craig Floyd is the chairman of the National
That's
Law
right.
Enforcement
Thank
Officers
you.
Memorial Fund. I serve with Craig. It's an honor on the executive board.
Yeah.
Craig and his great staff maintain the Law Enforcement Memorial Wall on Judiciary Square.
Beautiful.
But he also leads the campaign to have the first National Law Enforcement Officers Museum built. And, you know, with the help of our staff, my fellow board members, our corporate partners, we're going to get it done. But
yeah.
just a little recognition for Craig Floyd.
Yeah, that's our shout out to Craig Floyd. but what I was saying, it's not just, you know, that chaos. It's like just the ability to exercise your freedoms. In many countries in the world, when the cops show up, you know, they're the arm of a bad government, and you're about to have a very bad day. The police represent what's wrong with the country. They represent the loss of freedoms for innocent people. So we should, you know, I think, Tony, that the answer to that is, why aren't they getting it already? It's like, I don't think we saw that level of civilian deaths outside this past decade. So I want to give my shout out to Jenny. I think I hear her on the phone. I hear her doing it. It's like, can you imagine the families, how nice it must be to get presented with that flag? It's just got to be, you know, a very nice tribute.
Right.
To their family
well,
members.
And the importance of, you know, that SEA, you know, is involved in it, taking the lead, and that's the Senior Executives
right.
Association, which represents the SESers throughout the federal communities, are the top, you know, the top people in every federal agency that do a top non-politicals in every agency, and it's a you know, it's, I would say it's heartwarming, but it's nice to see them,
yeah.
you know, sort of taking this up and recognizing, you know, that employees, you know, all kinds of federal employees should be recognized in this way, and something that we traditionally reserved for, you know, our military or maybe our law enforcement, mm-hmm. firefighters, and recognizing, mm-hmm. you know, that everybody has a role to play.
And has played it, especially if they died in the line of duty. So Jenny wants me to let everybody know that the act, the bill, which would award the flag upon the death of a civilian employee in the line of duty, it's passed the House, it's in the Senate, it's in committee. Certainly between FLIOA and SEA, I assure everybody we'll be getting the word out. And, you know, I'm sure it's always nice for different facets of the federal employee community to get together on something and be able to do something just to recognize the work federal employees do in a very tough environment. But we're going to moving on here because John's got a number of issues on his plate. The next bill that John's got on his plate trying to get passed, everything I say to you, John's, good luck with that, is reducing the size of the federal government through Attrition Act. FLIO is in opposition to that bill. It's a bill, right, at this
Correct.
Point?
Yeah, that's a thumbs down bill, and unfortunately we've made great progress on it. I mean, you can tell by its title what it seeks to do is solve a very significant problem by a very ignorant solution, which is simply reduce the workforce, you solve the deficit. Okay, great for the think tanks. Now in reality, it doesn't work that way, and we were fortunate enough to have
it's politically safe, and that is the
yes.
hallmark
very good,
of
you're
our
right.
national it's, politics for decades. It's politically safe,
right, and convenient. And convenient, yeah. right? We always need a bad guy. It's the government worker, right? That's
right,
the bad guy.
Right, and just solve the financial issues of the government by, you know, not backfilling, as opposed to taking a look at programs and organization right. and structure and deciding, just like you would do in your own household, where to spend
right.
your money.
Correct. You know, waste, fraud, and abuse is what should be looked at, not the hardworking employee. But in this particular bill, the bill came to markup in Chairman Issa's committee, and we were fortunate enough to have Congressman Meehan introduce an amendment to carve out federal law enforcement. I mean, we appreciate the fact that he stood up and said, hey, wait a second. If you reduce the ranks of federal law enforcement, you are going to endanger Americans and the American public and our institutions. And fortunately, Chairman Issa supported it, as well as Congressman Lynch and a couple of others. And we sort of now, you know, it helps us to elevate that important message, which is, wait a second, don't forget about us, because we're here to sacrifice our lives to keep you safe. Please, you can freeze our pay, but do not reduce our ranks, because you're going to create a significant office of safety issue for us when
right.
there aren't enough of us. And you're also going to impact our ability to keep everyone in this country safe. And the most imminent threat is the one here in our country, not the one abroad, the one here. So if anything, we need to dedicate our resources to ensuring we do have enough. And this applies to state and local law enforcement, too.
Yeah, they're so squeezed.
It is so disheartening to see state and law enforcement officers get laid off, you know, because of that profound, ignorant mindset that they're just simply another government employee taking away precious funds from the state and local piggy bank. It's just, and unfortunately, some of these lessons get learned the hard way.
Right.
And,
with
you know,
you
hate
rate.
To have to wait exactly,
right.
Deb.
With
you know, the level
rate.
Of violent crime, the level of violent crime committed against law enforcement has risen significantly. And you can talk to Craig Floyd, and the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund website captures that data. And it's really, it's stunning. and disheartening. So, yeah. You know, so regarding 3029, we're very happy that Congressman Meehan did step up, and we got the support from Chairman Iser as well. And, you know, we're sort of using any means we can to elevate our message, which is federal law enforcement are not they're not expendable, they're not disposable, they are essential. And do not lose your eye or do not lose your focus on the need to have the right assets in play to keep Americans safe.
Yeah, you know, we have to take a mid-show break, but I feel I have to make this point. You hear for the last few years, and certainly you've heard it for at least 3 years, in the general economy and the private sector do more with less, right? And, you know, if you're running an IT company or a white-collar company that's producing a white-collar product, there's nothing wrong with the idea of doing more with less. I mean, and for the government to have to suffer the same sort of consequences as the private sector do more with less, I don't have heartburn with it. But I know a lot about federal law enforcement. I've worked with a lot of your members, and I spend a good deal of my practice involved in the work of these federal agencies involved in law enforcement. It's hard to really think about how they do more with less in a law enforcement activity. That's trickier, especially that point of safety. Because, you know, I hadn't thought about that, John, about officer safety.
I would suggest
I just think about it as like cases, you know, number of cases of made. But, you know, the last time I saw one of your I was at a function of yours and I saw one of your board members. I won't mention his name. I just said to him something like, when was the last time you drew your service weapon and discharged it? Jokingly. He said... Three days ago. Right. He said, I'm joking.
I've been around Debbie when she puts her foot in her mouth.
Right. Thank you, Anthony. And it was a drug bust in a house. Right. And guys going in the front, guys going in the back, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, officer safety.
Yes. You know, but here's something to think about that I think they don't think about. And, you know, it may often increase. You know, the expense when you decrease the amount of law enforcement, you may need more overtime. You may need more people on. It may take longer to solve a case, longer to solve a problem, more man hours. It like you said, an easy solution, right? And when you have easy solutions, these administratively easy, you know, rules to administer across the board, cut by X percent, will save us this. And when the law enforcement, you know, community, it's not a one size fits all. You know, it's hard to really put a template on it and figure, you know, is this going to cost us more money in the long run? Do I got to put more people on this? You know, and then does it cost the taxpayers more money?
So their own personal losses
if crimes aren't getting solved. If white collar crimes aren't getting solved.
Right.
If, you know, somebody's still committing workers' comp fraud, they're unable, you know, to get them off the rolls.
Or my father just had
IRS
fraud,
you
know, theft through his bank account, electronic, which is happening across the board in the banking industry. And we know that there are many places in the federal government and law enforcement where it's part of a much bigger criminal enterprise and they're working on it. My father lost several thousand dollars just the other day. So, you know, we'll see what the super committee or whatever does. John, before we take our break, tell us what's the status of this bill, reducing the size of the federal government through attrition. It's out of the House?
No, I believe it's still in the House. It got marked up from committee and it should be on the calendar.
Okay. So we'll be watching that. I know FLEO will be watching that. And as there's news about it, we certainly will let people know. We're going to take our mid-show break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hey, it's the Geico Gecko. Now, as a federal employee, you're probably one for a smart presentation, so I've put together some charts and graphs here. There you go. That will help illustrate the money you could save by switching to Geico. First thing you'll notice is that GEICO now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. Now this is big news. But that shouldn't come as any surprise from a car insurance company that has been serving government employees since 1936. And as you can see on this graph here, it's probably why we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. Yeah, no, I do actually realise you can't see these, but trust me, they're rather impressive. Especially the 97% customer satisfaction rate. And when you consider it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more, well, all you GS7 employees or above should just contact GEICO. Tell them, Mike.
Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey, and the Gecko said it best. Most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above, could get a discount on their car insurance. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
I'm Bill Bransford, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Fed Talk brings you inside information on hot topics in the federal community. From the halls of Congress to federal agencies, get the latest on the laws, regulations, and activities that directly impact federal employees. Tune into Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, as we bring in the experts to bring you inside the issues.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Deborah Roth, and this is our quarterly or so federal law enforcement show on which we bring the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association. Many of you will know them by the acronym FLEOA. John Adler is their president. John's with us in the studio. If you have a question or a comment for us, give us a call toll-free. We're at 1-877-936-9333. Or you can email your question or comment to our email address, which is fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. So, John, in getting ready for the show, I saw several of your press releases this week. It's like, what's new at FLEOA? And I saw one, a press release that you issued this week about a former employee. He's now a former employee over at EPA. And it intrigued me because it reminded me of some other cases I'd had, particularly representing some 1811s at CID at EPA. I'd seen a lot of similarity between cases I'd worked on in the last few years and the case in your press release. And I couldn't have been happier to see FLEOA on this issue. Tell us about that case and why you got a press release.
Yeah, you know, it's like you push Popeye to the limit and he says, I can't stand no more, and out comes the can of spinach. EPA, I find this very troubling. I've been aware, and Debbie's been aware, and Tony as well. There have been a series of allegations and cases relating to management retaliation in EPA. And I mean, several of my EPA CID members, mm-hmm. whether they're members or not, they're still federal law enforcement officers,
right.
have been the subject of management retaliation. And a lot of it is subsequent to there being whistleblowers or speaking out. And it's just sort of, you know, it's been a contagion that has grown and grown and grown and sort of been kept under the radar. And now more recently, what triggered the press release was something that came to my attention that just knocked me out of my chair. Dr. Richard Hammer, an Annapolis graduate, a Vietnam War veteran, a Marine, honorable man. I mean, the man has given 48 years of his life to government service, joins the EPA approximately 5-6 years ago, I think, as a research scientist. So we have not only a man of honor, but a man of extreme intellect. And what happens to Dr. Hammer? Dr. Hammer joins, and what he discovers is the unit he's assigned to, there's a lot of what he sees as waste, fraud, and abuse. And he brings to the attention of upper management there certain things, whether it's time abuse, it's misspending of money, scientists engaging in projects that are personal in nature and not to the benefit of the government. And in the course of his pointing these things out, the upper management chooses to ignore him, but not only ignore him, but marginalize him, criticize him, threaten him, telling him you better keep your mouth shut. And this goes on for a period of a year to 2 years. And in the course of that time, Dr. Hammer, a man of honor, doesn't back down. And he just stands his ground and says, this is wrong.
He doesn't think it's coming. No one would think it's coming.
No, because that's the way an honorable veteran thinks. You do the right thing. So ultimately, as a means to appease him and maybe shut him up, they get an outside investigator, Dr. Peter Mader, to come in and look at what Dr. Hammer has been alleging. It came to the attention of Dr. Hammer that, by way of informal conversation, that Dr. Mader did substantiate all of what he had said. Unfortunately, and this is back in 2009, November, what we refer to as the Mader Report has not been released or disclosed by EPA. It's been buried, in effect. It's probably down there with Elvis and Bruce Lee, and maybe it's in the Swiss Alps for all we know.
Right, but even after filing legitimate Freedom of Information Act and Privacy Act requests, your constituent has been unable to get a copy of a report that an investigative report that was produced because of concerns he raised.
Correct. So what happens, just sort of fast forwarding, is that because of the amount of abuse and stress put on Dr. Hammer, he begins to suffer. It has a tremendous impact on his health, and he really gets hurt by this. And, you know, they continue to threaten him, and they pull him off projects and put him on the bench, you know, in a manner of speaking. So fast forward, Dr. Hammer finally files an EEO grievance in, I think it's June of 2011. Subsequent to that, now right after he files it, they terminate him. It comes to my attention, and Fleo Legal Counsel represents Dr. Hammer on the appeal. Unfortunately, as you know, Deb can explain probably better than I can, you know, having an attorney is about as meaningful as having a pet rock because they're just
Eddie P.A.
Yeah, Eddie P.A. because they're just there appears to be an absence of due process or decency in these cases, in these instances. So we lose the appeal, and just days before Veterans Day, not only do we lose the appeal, but they terminate Dr. Hammer's health insurance because they classified his conduct as gross misconduct. So they leave an honorable veteran who's given 48 years of his life to our country without health insurance on Veterans Day to take care of his son who has asthma and a broken leg. This is how we treat an honor. Now I can't imagine anything that man could have done to be characterized as gross misconduct. It should be outstanding honor, not gross misconduct. Yet, and they didn't even inform him of that. They just took it away.
And Debbie, we should point out just how unusual, you know, as lawyers who practice personnel law in the federal government, just how unusual it is to have that gross misconduct charge be attached to revoking your health insurance.
Yeah, I was telling John, I spread the press release, and it's not in the press release, John, about the gross misconduct finding, which was the legal impetus to take his health insurance. And I encourage you to get the word out because in 22 years of practicing law, representing federal employees, this is the second case where I've ever seen an agency label the misconduct charge as gross misconduct. And that label triggers an automatic loss of health insurance. You lose your health insurance coverage. I've only seen it one other time in 22 years. It is so rare. And I think it's because agencies feel it's so unconscionable. I think it's probably reserved for people who commit literally felonies against their insurers. I mean, against their employers. And when you even think of employees who've gotten discharged for far worse, whatever it is they said he did.
Fraud, some real fraud.
Yeah, time and attendance
really
fraud.
Strikes at the heart of the employee-employer relationship.
Yeah. No agency would ever. They just don't. It's like, take their health insurance?
Espionage.
It's definitely legally available. Why is it that no one uses it? And how is it that his conduct rose to the level? Regrettably, it's a pattern at EPA. And I call it going in for the kill. That, as you point out, John, when they speak out against something, you can't, it's just overwhelming how they want to not, they don't want to just reassign you, make your job miserable, the standard, let me retaliate. You see a lot of that, unfortunately, in the federal system. It's, I'm going to end your career and your life. And I've had a few cases over there. And to me, when I saw it before your case, when I saw it over the last few years, I realized the connection. It hadn't even occurred to me. EPA is the agency that brought the rest of the federal system the No Fear Act. And it was because of an EEO reprisal case that was so appalling that it got the attention of Congress. And they were so offended by the abuse of managerial authority to retaliate against one of their employees that they passed the No Fear Act, imposing all kinds of legal requirements on agencies who are found to have violated the EEO laws. And that yet, despite the passing of that statute, the culture of EPA, you hear these cases coming out of EPA, and you feel like the culture of EPA really hasn't changed much. So when I saw your press release, I was like, go for it, John.
And the other thing our listeners should really understand, Debbie jokingly said, you're getting like a union. You know,
I didn't say that. I said like the size of a union.
And this
is
important to point out that, you know, it's unusual for John Adler, national president, to use his national status, get on a radio show, and talk about what essentially is a personnel case,
right,
which is handled, you know, which is handled by your legal staff, Larry Berger and his legal team, handle thousands of cases for your members annually, and you're not talking about those cases. You respect and you realize that there's a process in the federal federal government. Cases can go either way. You know, it is this kind of case, you know, that's unusual, you know, for you to take it to the national level, much like a lot of our listeners probably recall the Will Clark situation, the ATF agent in the Virgin Islands. And I just sort of want to mention that, you know, this is just not you up here railing for one of your members, you know, simply because they're paying dues. This is, you know, you represent, you know, law enforcement across those 63 agencies. And the reason you are raising this as an issue, because you feel this affects folks across the board. You know, it's more than, you know, this veteran losing his health insurance, you know, day before Veterans Day. It's, you know, what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
You know, I appreciate that, Tony. It does epitomize the worst of the worst.
And it does.
As Debbie said, it's such unacceptable mean-spiritedness to go after and ruin someone's life. But this particular case is the exclamation point. It's the exclamation point of honor, because I haven't met a more decent man than Dr. Hammer, and this is unacceptable. And you're right. I normally don't come on and speak about these things, but in this particular case, if I remain silent, I might as well be dead.
Yeah. Well, I'm watching this one, John, because, you know, I always say, I mimic what my mother used to say, Deborah, be patient. What goes around comes around. I would have thought No Fear would have cured the EPA of this. I don't think they're cured. I get you want to fire him. I get your average federal system reprisal. Take his health insurance? I don't get that. I just don't get that. And I want our listeners to appreciate that this isn't just an anomaly. It's in the category of never used. Never used. It took the guy, after 48 years of service, he took his health insurance. Anyway, so you know where I'm at it. I'll be watching John closely. He has my support. We do have to take our final show break. We'll come back. We're going to close out with John, his final issues, what's on FLIOA's agenda as it goes into the end of the year. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
It's the Geico Gecko with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum, but there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good, which brings me to the big news. GEICO now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing, or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to GEICO. So no matter if you're blue or red, or in my case, green. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, contact GEICO and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. And like the Gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. It's our last 13 minutes, 12 minutes of the show. Why is time is always tight with us, John? It's like we never have enough time to cover all your issues. And maybe it's just because we like to go on and on and on about our own personal opinions about things. But we have about 10 minutes left, John, and you've got a couple of very important items to cover. I know many of your members are listening. And I've heard about the FICA issues for a while now with FLIOA. It seems, I mean, I can't say it's moved or made progress, but we probably should give people an update, right?
Correct. Yeah, the FECA reform efforts, and more recently by Senator Collins and Senator Lieberman, it has been wrapped into the postal reform bill. We are very concerned with the content of that bill. You know, we're in the process of working with and speaking to Senator Collins' staff. The bill is a very broad, far-reaching effort to reform, as they see it, abuse of the disability medical retirement system and benefits. And what the bill seeks to do is pull people off of the disability retirement once they reach that retirement, that Social Security retirement age.
The FECA, the Federal Employee Compensation Act. People who are is that workers' comp?
No, well, workers' comp ultimately evolves into a disability retirement,
okay,
or medical OPM medical retirement.
Okay,
And you know what they're not looking at, they see it as, oh yeah, well there are a bunch of postal workers who are out there and they're sort of quote unquote milking the government role, and this is another one of those quote unquote quick fixes. What they're not looking at, and by the way, I don't support that view, but what they're not looking at is we have numerous, and you know, talk about Dr. Hammer, numerous, you know, honorable veterans, law enforcement veterans who are under that medical retirement. One comes to mind, a former Navy SEAL who I've been talking to, who got severely injured in the line of duty, went out on a medical disability, and has received the pittance that we do get under the medical retirement, which, by the way, is 40% of your high three. Most state and local law enforcement, it's at least 60, 75%. But aside from that disparity—
And if he hadn't gone out on disability and he'd gone out on his regular retirement, he'd be somewhere around 80%.
Correct.
Yeah.
So what we have now is somebody who has been just getting by. You know, we get banged up in law enforcement. The injuries we sustain are traumatic. We get hurt by way of, you know, use of force conflicts, shot at, stabbed, beat up, vehicular accidents, you know, driving quickly, training accidents because our training is serious and hardcore. You know, we don't sort of, you know, break our toenail running to the water fountain.
Post-traumatic stress. And
yeah, sure.
Other things
Tony's
like
had
that.
A few of those. PTSD.
Absolutely. So, you know, what we're dealing with is an incapacitated law enforcement officer who got injured, usually under heroic circumstances, who can no longer work or do what we currently do or anything even comparable. So, you know, and we'll be taking painkillers for the rest of our life. So you think it's really fair? I have this honorable man who dedicated his life not only in the military but in law enforcement. You're now going to pull him off of the money he has now built his lifestyle around and reduce it by 30, 50 plus percent or more? That's outright wrong. So first of all,
that's their proposal.
Yes, it's not grandfathering in those who are currently on the discipline. Now, the second side of it is the system itself is wrong.
Mm.
You know, in terms of law enforcement, we'd like to have the opportunity. Don't just funnel us into retirement. Give us a year to come back to work. You know, you go from after workers' comp 45 days. Now you're starting to use your leave. Our view is we want to come back to work. Give us time to rehabilitate. If we can't come back in a year, we're probably not going to be able to come back, and we should go out on a medical retirement. But the benefits we should receive should be comparable to state and local law enforcement, because the government needs to recognize mm-hmm. the injuries we go out from and suffer from really limit our ability to earn any income. And in fact, we're going to suffer pain, but we do that with pride. We don't complain about the pain. We take that with honor. The issue is, do not cut our money and our funding to survive.
It's another situation, you know, we talked about before, you know, easy fix, bait, you throwing a baby out with the bathwater. You know, the system is indeed
broken. Well, it's a one-size-fits-all.
It's fraught with fraud, number one, you know, which is the real problem, if you ask me. You know, if you apply more investigators, you know, on the process to really investigate individuals engaged in workers' comp fraud, you know, you'll find, all due respect, a lot of people, even agents who are on the rolls out there playing golf on jet skis and things like that.
You know, Department of Labor is the one. The investigators at Department of Labor who are part of John's constituents, you know, I know those guys, and I agree, Tony. And, I mean, they got a full caseload.
Well, and all they really do, I mean, and I'm probably going to receive calls or emails on this, but back in the day, all they really did was cross-reference the Social Security numbers with the IRS to make sure they weren't working somewhere else. You know, and that's, you know, really all they did to police it. And that's not to say they're not doing their job over there. They're spread thin. There's only so many IG agents that, you know, that can do that. And, you know, the agencies, the individual agencies, because the money comes off of their budget. A lot of people don't realize that.
The
workers' comp money comes right off the top of their budget every year. So the agencies ought to be just invested to find fraud. But the thing that John, we've talked about over the years on this issue, that I think is worth mentioning again, you know, it's not so much you want something special, you know, you want labor to realize that there are special circumstances around your job.
It's different.
You know, you guys are paid different. You're in a primary rigorous type of position. When you come back to work, there are different issues. You know, I'm a lawyer. You just throw me back in. You know, I can read this, read that. You know, you're coming back in. You got to get qualified with your firearm again. You know, maybe you can't go out on warrants. You can't do this. Are you going to be on light duty for a little while? How does this affect law enforcement availability pay? There are all these issues that, you know, I think it does it does require sort of a separate unit, you know, within labor to deal with them. And there's different injuries. You know, I mentioned, you know, PTSD, and, you know, people will say, what does that mean? Well, you respond, you're a first responder to 9/11, right. You're a first responder to, you know, an arson attack, or, you know, some pretty horrific things out there. I mean, you live with that as you go forward in your career, and that can manifest itself in a variety of different ways, substance abuse, you know, and you know, other psychological disorders, which are very hard to put your hands around. And, you know, and that's kind of all we're talking about, is just have some area of expertise, you know, to apply to this.
Well, you know, I think, Tony, that was, you know, what you just said, it would be a good segue to the combined federal campaign. And the reason is that in spite of unfortunately, irrespective of what's being done by way of taking care of our folks in a disability arena, the combined federal campaign provides us with an opportunity to give money to those organizations that do step up and do the right thing by our guys, and in particular for federal law enforcement. You know, the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association has a foundation, and that foundation is a part of the combined federal campaign. In fact, you know, since we are starting a campaign now, I ask everyone to consider looking up the CFC, as we refer to it, number 54726. That's a number, or you can look it up just by the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association Foundation. We also have my good friend Craig over at the Memorial.
Yeah.
The National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund is also a part of the campaign. Their number is 11631. And I mentioned these two organizations not just because I sit on the board of both of them, but I know what they do and I know where the money goes.
What's the foundation? It's the FLIOA Foundation. Tell our listeners. I know what it does. Tell our listeners what they do.
Yeah, good point, Deb. The foundation provides immediate financial and other forms of support to FLIOA members, families, or members themselves who either are seriously or critically injured or are killed in the line of duty or suffering from a terminal or very serious medical illness. We step right up. There's no red tape, blue tape, black tape, or any tape. There are no piles of paper like following up on the Public Safety Office of Benefit Program, which takes a while to administer. It's immediate. The word comes to us, the money goes out, the support goes right out. And that's what should be done. That's what heroes and dedicated people, men and women, deserve. And that's what our foundation delivers.
And your CFC number, again, for our listeners, 54726.
Thanks,
Something
Dave.
I want to point out to our listeners, they're just not going to know this, but I would just say FLIOA walks the walk and talks the talk with their foundation. A lot of money that they get from outside sources, vendors, whatever stuff they're doing, fundraising and things like that.
They give it right
they
into
their foundation.
They don't
put it back in their coffers to run their organization. They give it to their foundation because they believe in their foundation and what it does. So
thank you, Tony.
So kudos to you guys for doing that.
And to Tony, who's obviously a good supporter of the foundation, and some of our other partners as well, who do recognize that value. And we greatly appreciate, the membership appreciates that support and recognition.
So we have 1 minute. I like the Federal Employee Leave Transfer Act. Tell our listeners about that. I like that a lot. One minute.
We can also refer to it as the sick leave bank. What we're trying to do is mirror the same administrative policies in terms of how we're allowed to use annual leave with sick leave. So it would basically afford us the right to donate or contribute sick leave to another injured or seriously ill government employee who's in need after they exhaust their annual leave, is in need of that sort of support. So we want to be able to donate our sick leave the same way we donate annual leave.
Another no-brainer now that they changed the laws on our FERS retirement.
Right?
You got to get credit for your sick leave. It's yours. You ought to do whatever the heck you want with it.
Yeah. Just so everybody knows, FLIOA drafted this proposal. They got Jim Moran of Virginia to Representative Jim Moran to introduce it. Like I said, Godspeed with everything you have pending on the Hill. I wish you all the best of luck. I'm going to close the show and remind everybody that if you want to know about the national conference FLIOA had a few weeks ago and the awards that they handed out, which are just tearjerkers, I was there, tearjerkers, go to FedAgent and read the article that Tony's company put together. He went through all the awards. They're really terrific. John, thanks for being on our
show.
Thanks,
that was great.